everyone. Welcome to The Dot Matrix at thedotmatrix.com and on iTunes. I'm Justin.
And I'm Sean.
And this is episode 29. It's been a long time coming, has it not?
Yes, 2 months now, I think.
You're sounding awfully sexy or very sick. One or the other, Sean.
I know. I'm trying to get my voice back here. I think I almost lost it this week with a slight cold I had, but feeling good, ready to rock, ready for some sushi after this.
Nice. Oh, gosh, yeah. The last time we were all set to go, what happened, Sean?
Well, the last time, yeah, see how quickly we forget, or I forget. Well, I came over to your house because we were going to do our second podcast at your house.
Yeah, I was getting all excited.
And it was going to be a fun time, you know.
But, oh, it was a fun time anyways.
Yes, that's true, as always. But microphone or no microphone, which is what happened. I forgot my nice blue snowball microphone. Why, I have no idea. I was so excited to go visit Justin, because I haven't been to his house in a while.
And I was like, great, okay, let's go. Where's the microphone?
Oh my god.
Let's plug in your mic.
Yeah, let's just plug in your mic, see if we can get ready. I'm like, I don't think I can do that. Sorry. So yeah, so this is, that was supposed to be our November podcast.
Yeah, so now we're square into December. It's December what?
19th. Yeah. That's the week till Christmas. Or, yeah. I don't know what else happens on Christmas Day, but Christmas.
I don't know why we're laughing. Oh, gosh. So much to talk about, Sean. So much. It's our year in review podcast, because knowing us, we're not going to get to another one before the new year, that's for sure. And, heck of a lot to talk about. I'll just list things. There's the whole Copenhagen
debacle
going on. There is Obama. Everything revolves around Obama these days. So
yes,
him and his Nobel Prize. He actually received it.
Yeah.
There's the whole U.S. healthcare bill that just got the 60th vote confirmed today.
Oh.
Yes, without a public health option, of course. So it's, and I was talking to my sister, I said, well, what does that mean exactly? So if there's no public health option, then how does it expand coverage to over 30 more million Americans or whatever the numbers are, you know?
Yeah.
I don't quite get it. But anyway, so I was reading more in the New York Times about that. So that one's going on. What else is happening?
Well, Tiger Woods.
Oh, God, Tiger Woods. Yes.
I think just Canadian politics in general.
Well, the whole
Nadia of not being able to catch a break.
Yeah, and the whole Harper in Canada winning the Fossil Award of the year or whatever it was, and rightfully so, of course, but yeah, a whole bunch of other stuff going on, yeah.
Well, you know, about that whole, like, we might as well start with the environmental.
Sure, please.
Because that's big happening, and like you said, we got the Fossil Award this year. You know, I was, as you've been watching and reading and trying to keep up to date with all the goings on in Copenhagen, Denmark,
or as they call it, Brokenhagen.
Are you serious?
I heard one reporter say that.
Brokenhagen. Oh my. Well, and just how, you know, we're looking like objectionists, the government of Canada, going there and trying to just not want to play ball with anything, it seems. But I just saw how David Suzuki just came out the other day and said, first off, I don't even know if our prime minister is a climate change skeptic or not. Is he a denier or not? And that's a pretty fundamental thing we need to know before we can expect our government to do anything about any of this.
True enough.
So I found that point kind of interesting. But do you think that we probably went there with good intentions, or you think they just went to get a new treaty?
Oh, I don't think they went with good intentions. I think they went with no intentions.
Yeah. I would agree.
You know, I don't know. It's a good point about whether or not Harper himself is denier of climate change science and so forth. And I don't really know. Like, I really don't No, although I think there's some stuff coming out in various reports that I haven't really read, but, you know, it kind of has those headlines that you kind of wonder. But, I mean, they had no goals. They have no goals. Canada has been pretty much lax on any sort of Kyoto Protocol implementation. And, I mean, it was really clear that they're connecting themselves to the U.S.
Yes, follow them.
And whatever the U.S. does, we'll be fine with. Because whatever they do, it'll impact us anyways, and we can't do anything different because they're just the big elephant next to the little mouse sort of thing, right? And that's such, you know, it's such a traditional way of looking at the Canadian sovereignty in North America, right? It's very Mulroney-esque kind of thing. So I just think they have no voice. They came in with no voice, and they came out with no voice. Like, why would he even come? He wasn't part of the world leaders who got together to try to hammer out the deal that they ended up hammering out, although, you know, people could say, you know, what kind of deal did they hammer out? But he wasn't even in the room, from my understanding.
Yeah.
So, he's a non-entity. And Canada, as a country, given its size and its proximity to the United States, has a real opportunity to be a real leader in this area.
It's amazing.
Just by the juxtaposition of being next to the United States could be, you know, I think we have a much more European mentality on climate change as a population than the United States does, at least generally, in the urban centers, although 90% of the Canadian population lives in urban centers, so, because Europe by far leads the way in terms of the right mentality around the economics of climate change and it being the way the economy is being restructured, you know, it's pretty forward thinking for a civilization that is much more, you know, centuries older than we are, we had no vision and we continue to have the policy is to have no policy.
It's funny that you mentioned too, you know, like this whole following the states thing, because obviously we're linked in so many ways with the states, but yet that's never stopped certain leaders beforehand. I mean, you know, we always talk about what did Chrétien do during his years.
Yes, I know where you're going with this.
You know where I'm going. Well, you know, I bring it up because I was reading a lot about it recently and how, you know, 98, he signed it under Chrétien.
Yep.
Didn't ratify it till 2002, almost 2003.
Yep.
So it took 4 years. Nothing really happened in the meantime with getting our targets down because our emissions are like 25% higher than they were back then anyway. So then you have, Harper being in government for the last 3 to 4 years, and they're saying, well, the Liberals did nothing, and it's the typical conservative way of thinking. It's like, well, they did nothing, why should we? And their so-called targets, 20% below 2006 levels, I mean, it's such a blatant way of not being held accountable to the Kyoto thing which we signed.
Yeah.
And yes, the Liberals were slow to getting going.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of
they're stagnant
stonewalling and they did nothing really. And
one ton challenge. That's what they did do.
Yeah. No one's disagreeing, but that I just don't understand how the Conservatives have a real opportunity here to be like, okay, Liberals sucked. Here, we can show leadership here.
Yeah.
The U.S. has been frozen solid on it since Bush was in power, and Obama's trying to open up it again. 8 years gone by that U.S. have done nothing. It's also our opportunity to show leadership towards the U.S. and say, we can do this. Now you can, too. It's amazing. And this Prentice guy, the environment minister, all he says is, the only thing that can come out of Copenhagen is a treaty between that the U.S. and China will sign.
Yeah, it's abdicating, well, it's not really about us. Well, it's about everyone, people.
I can't believe we have elected people who think like this. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, and again, it's about politics, and it's about the game of politics, which is annoying to no end. And I cannot stop saying that more fervently as time goes on. Because, the fact that Chrétien, the government, and the Liberals did nothing, that's a moot point. what are you doing today?
Absolutely.
And I guess it's politically expedient to sort of point to the inaction of a previous government. Or, you know, to say, well, we didn't, you know, we weren't the ones who brought in this legislation. We're not really. But, well, you didn't really bring in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms or the Healthcare Act, but kind of you are a government, so you kind of have to, you know, it's not
yeah.
government of the time, right? I mean, it's government of government, you know, every, it's just so stupid. Actually, when you were bringing up Christian about, you know, how, you know, we not always going, I thought you were going to go a different way in terms of what you were saying. With Kritcha and not doing everything the U.S. you know does, like, well, one,
yeah.
they didn't go into Iraq like they wanted,
right?
So that was one aspect. I thought you were gonna point to those things or the
right.
whole gay marriage thing. While the United States is just, you know, falling over themselves to try to get that right.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, those to me are aspects where. We can show leadership as an independent country, but we choose not to on the big thing. I mean, gay marriage is a big thing, but that's not what's going to put you ahead of the curve in leadership. That's just like, well, we should have done that years ago. You know, like, the climate change is happening now, and you have to be forethinking about it, right? So,
yeah, well, that's... It's funny when you talked about, the old Progressive Conservative Party, which is now the Conservative Party.
Yeah.
When you think of the conservative type of thinking, is they always align themselves with the states,
mm-hmm.
compared to, like, Trudeau was not like that. He was liberal. John Turner or Chrétien. But it's like we've been a little more, I don't want to say anti-American view during those times, but it's a little more alive and well compared to when the conservatives are in power. Yet... those are also seen as the weaker times for Canada on
yeah.
the world stage at the same time. So it's kind of a weird paradox.
That's interesting. That's true, actually. I didn't think about that. That's very true.
I don't get that, because, like, I was just watching, like, CBC Archives,
mm-hmm.
old news stories.
Yeah.
They showed the clip of the John Turner and Brian Mulroney debate.
Oh,
where they
yes.
were talking about the free trade agreement.
Yeah, yeah.
John Turner, I mean, even though he lost that debate in that election, you know, a lot of people... we're proud of what he was trying to say that day about we're not trying to follow the states and we're not trying to do things for the states and become, you know, like, basically ruled by the states effectively economically.
Right.
But this, what you're seeing 20 years later today, you know, like Harper wasn't going to go down there until Obama
right.
confirmed he was going to Copenhagen. It's unbelievable. Like, I don't understand it. So.
Yeah, gosh.
Topic number one.
Yes. One thing I do want to mention that I don't know if it got much, I don't know if you noticed it, it didn't get much press, but when you were talking about, when you brought up Kritcha, and my mind goes to the one good thing he did, which was, you know, bring in gay marriage in Canada.
Yeah.
Although it was Paul Martin's government that actually voted it in.
Right, he got the ball rolling
yeah,
by far.
Yeah, he did like 90% of the way, and then, you know, Paul Martin got the last 10 yards, so to speak, to use a
sure.
NFL
which
football.
Are important.
We haven't talked about an NFL football game, too, remember? That's one thing we have to talk about.
That's,
too.
Big on our list.
NFL football, I'm going to write this down. But one thing, I don't know if you noticed, but the city of Washington, D.C.,
yeah.
their council, or whatever the municipal government voted... I think a very big majority to allow gay marriage in the city.
Well, Elaine pointed that out to me.
Yes.
And I said to her, I didn't know that municipal level could decide those things.
Well, I think in the States, I think it's part of how they're set up. But in Canada, I don't think the city of Vancouver
right.
or whatever can, you know, that has to happen on a... I think that falls nationally, I think, which is
yeah.
sort of why it happened through Parliament in Canada. But when you think about some of the movement that happens in the United States, like, what was it, the first city was San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
And then it got, the state abolished it. So I think it can happen in many different levels, but I think the state... can overturn it, and then the federal government can overturn that through the Constitution, right? So so there's many different ways it could be instigated, but many different ways it could be quashed.
Yeah, sure.
So the you know, the city of Washington, D.C. is now legalizing marriage, and they say they can start issuing marriages as of March, depending on whether or not Congress ratifies it. Because Congress doesn't ratify, like, what happens in San Francisco or other mm-hmm. cities, mm-hmm. but because Washington, D.C. is the city where the federal government sits,
right,
they have a say somehow. It's a unique situation. So Congress has to vote for this particular municipal bill.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so...
But that kind of makes sense, because they're just a district. They're not a...
Exactly. Yeah. They're not a state. They have no state jurisdiction at all. So.
Right.
But yeah, so as long as that happens, and who knows if that's going to happen, I don't know. But yeah. So I think that's kind of cool.
That is very cool.
Because of all the losses that's happened in terms of the movement of legalizing gay marriage, there's been a lot of, you know, things, and referendums and whatever, and various different elections have voted it down. So this is the first one in a while that's actually been a positive thing in the movement, right, in the last number of years. So.
Well, New Hampshire just became the fifth state.
Oh, right, yes,
to allow gay marriage, but that has to be ratified in January or something. Or it starts in January. So that's, you know, it's the states, everything's just slowly just going to erode everything. You know what I mean? It's just, all the change is just going to come from the grassroots, you know. Because coming from the top is very slow, and it's so contested.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like a, you know, if cities and states can do their own thing in a positive way, I think that will go a lot further and a lot faster to any change down there. But I think it's a lot of the same up here. Like with a lot of our provinces having their own targets for emissions, like BC, Quebec, Ontario, they're mainly just being like you hear Chalet the other day, it was just like, we're not going to be letting, you know, the oil sands in Alberta stop, you know, Canada's progress in the...
Right.
Cutting emissions and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and that's I was watching the news, the local news, and they had a political science person on, which I'm like talking about Copenhagen, and I thought, well, why are you having a political science person and not a you know, environmental studies
right.
person, you know?
Right.
But actually, it made sense, because she was talking about that exact point about how it's very odd that the way the Canadian Federation is set up, where you have you know, the federal government negotiating on behalf of the country in places like Copenhagen, but all the natural resources are owned by the provincial governments or by the provinces.
Right.
So the oil, like, they can do whatever they can in terms of Canada to do emissions targets or non-emissions targets, non-binding. But in the end, it's Alberta who decides what happens at the oil sands, not Canada.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So it's a very weird thing, like... Like, you could be negotiating on behalf of you and I, but if I have my own person can decide what I want to do with my own stuff, like, you can't really dictate what I can do, right?
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
interesting.
Well, and it creates a lot of tension, because, you know, the Stelmach,
yeah.
the premier of Alberta, like, he just comes out and says, may I remind you how much money comes out of Alberta that goes to the rest of the country, you know?
It's true, though. That's a powerful card you have to play.
Yeah. It's just sad, though, that it, you know, it goes that way a lot of the time. But I applaud, though, other leaders for speaking out. You know, if other premiers or territorial leaders say, you know, this is wrong, and this is why, I think that's powerful in itself, only to be rebuked or whatever.
Yeah. So what's next on our list?
Well, maybe we should talk about football, because it was a fun event.
Okay.
So Jess and I went down with our other friends and family down to Seattle at Quest Field to watch the Seattle Seahawks play the Detroit Lions. Is that right?
You're such a big fan, you don't even remember the team. Yes, the Detroit Lions.
I know. So it was a big experience for us, just because, well, we had never seen an NFL game, and it's such a huge, you know, monster scale compared to
yes.
the CFL up here.
Well, and of course, we went down. We should have gone down much earlier, but we decided we wouldn't go down so early in the morning. And Mike, you know, it's true. Mike wanted us to go down to do the tailgate, and we actually missed the tailgate. So I kind of missed the fact that we didn't do the tailgate.
Yeah,
and didn't
that was
have,
unfortunate.
Like,
yes.
20 hot dogs and 5 burgers. That would have been awesome. But at the same time, I do value sleep, and I do understand the value of that.
Yeah.
I think, I know, even though I did sleep over at your, here the night before.
That's
that,
right. That was the first time we had someone stay over, so get a trophy for that.
I do. I'm expecting it soon. But yeah, it was kind of neat to go down and what were your impressions of it generally?
Oh.
Like the Seahawks won, of course. Spoiler for people, they did win, right? Yes,
they won
yeah.
in the end. I think I was just amazed of the building itself. The Quest Field was amazing architectural gem. I thought how they it seemed so intimate because of how steep. You know, the rows, the stands were, the bleachers, whatever. It was
yep.
just so brought everyone in, and compared to, like, RPC Place, for example.
Right.
Where it's just so vast and echoey and boomy. And but just people just going apeshit over this, you know, like,
one,
these are
two,
real fans.
1, 2, 3, first down.
That's right. Every first down people in our area were yelling that out. That was great. Just, you know, it's just everything's just a heightened whole new level, you know? The food, the merchandise, the crowds, the drinking, the carousing, just the whole thing of that's what people do on Sundays down in the States, you know?
Right.
So that was my main thing, just the hugeness of it and just larger than life. Kind of very, almost kind of like a theme park-like, you know?
Right, yeah.
You know? Over the top.
I thought it was interesting because at a certain we were so high up.
Yeah.
That birds were flying below us. I thought that was hilarious. But the expansiveness was the huge. And the other thing that we haven't mentioned was that it was Military Appreciation Day.
Yeah.
Or Armed Forces or whatever the term was, but and I was, I mean, as an outsider, you get to watch it a bit differently, right? When you. In the fervor of being in the USA and being, I mean, there is a huge, you know, military contingent there because I think Boeing is part of what they do is a military piece, right? I mean, I think so.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of military manufacturing that happens in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And just, you know, when those gigantic helicopters flew by, like, it's not just your little medical helicopters or the traffic copters that you see flying by when you're doing traffic reports and stuff. It's, like, massive, like, I think tanks come out of those helicopters kind
yeah.
of thing, right? They, you know, it was...
Whole army brigades
yeah,
come out of those.
Huge. and I was surprised, you know, and again, being very Canadian, you see... You get a sense that, oh, well, it's going to be too brash and crass, but it was very tastefully done,
yeah.
completely on message, wasn't over the top. I mean, it was over the top, but it wasn't over the top, you know?
Yeah.
And you could just see, like, I could feel myself feeling a swell of pride, and
sure.
I'm not even American, right?
Sure.
You know? And
Unmistakable,
and... Like, they know what they're doing. Like, it is, I guess in some ways, it is propaganda in some ways, you know, to build that feeling of the, you know, military-industrial complex and all that sort of notions. And you can see how...
The liberators and all that.
Yeah,
stuff,
the part of the military mentality is part of the American fabric.
Yeah, yeah.
And why it's not, and how it has not been part of the Canadian one for you know, various reasons. And when the... The vet from Puget Sound, who lived in the same town for most of his life, but went and stormed Normandy or whatever it was
yeah.
that he stormed,
yeah.
and he raised that flag that represented the 11th man on the field, which is the crowd,
right?
And 60,000 plus people went stood up and cheered for that man,
and he was overcome,
and the fact, yeah, and that's the classiness of it. Like he was overcome. And he didn't have to say anything. He didn't say anything. You couldn't say anything. I mean, there's no mic on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just without any words, and they showed him on the Jumbotron screen, and his eyes were watery and teary-eyed, like, that was enough, right? Like, like you could see the heroism in which soldiers are placed, and the impact it has on individual soldiers, and it was interesting, because just today, this afternoon, I downloaded on iTunes the very first Bill Moyers Journal podcast, again, as it was, I had deleted it after a while, I had to re-download it again, it was an interview he did with Jon Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
And at that time, I think he had just, the night or so before, had John McCain on.
Okay.
And it was still during the Bush years, and he was talking about the new surge that he was going to send into Iraq, and the interview, and I remember it very clearly now, and which is why I was so glad that they talked about it and deconstructed. I think even we talked about it on this podcast about him, about Bill Moyers and Jon Stewart deconstructing that interchange, or that exchange between the two men, and how at a certain point they weren't talking about the same thing anymore, and John McCain just sort of shut down and then started spewing out things about it's offensive to the troops and you have to be, you know, and all the, and
yeah.
And Jon Stewart, which is what I think a lot of Canadians try to understand this difference, are just trying to say, well, no one's disputing that. Like, no one's disputing that soldiers are doing a great job and they're asked to do horrendous things and they do it with honor for our country.
Yeah.
And no one's disputing the value of that sacrifice and the sacrifice of families. But ... right? China is what, you know, help me understand why this is a good thing and why we're doing this and all this different stuff. And people just can't get, people who are pro-war can't get beyond that message.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are anti-war also sometimes can't get past that message. But there's that middle ground where people just, like, hey, let's just take away that fundamental thing about U.S. culture, about, you know, being proud of our troops and being proud of our military history, and talk realistically about what's going on in this situation, right? So, and it was really clear, that line, when you're at that game, you know, there is that line where who cares if you're Democratic or Republican or pro-war or anti-war, you don't mess with the troops.
Yeah.
And the troops deserve respect. And it was really clear. I don't know, it's just really fascinating.
But I think it's really important to point out, because, you know, our I find our political leaders here often use those very, you know, well, I haven't got anything else to argue with, so I'm going to bring back to offending the troops or not respecting the troops, and they do that a lot. Like, especially the other thing we were going to mention was this Afghan detainee scandal.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, every time that our government is questioned about our military involvement, they keep saying, well, we don't want to, you know, make our troops look bad or put them into extra danger, jeopardy, and, you know, we can't question what they're doing. And it's just,
but
it's not what they're doing on the ground. It's what we're asking them to do and why. Like, what's behind it, you know? And that's the part I always have the biggest problem with. Because, you know, I'll admit, there are times when I hear about what some of those Taliban guys do, like when they're throwing acid in a schoolgirl's face, and it just makes me want to just kill every last one of them. You know what I mean? Because I think that's a natural reaction.
Yeah.
But
okay.
But why we're there, and, you know, like, you know, we might be helping, or we might be just creating a larger problem. Like, who knows, right? We don't. That's the debate, right?
Right.
But it seems like in this country we're not allowed to have that debate. You know?
But I feel like, I don't know. I feel when, and it, the people who bring up the offensive to the troops things argument in Canada is the federal government, is the Conservative Party, which is, you know, very much ideologically, their ideology is to just sort of do what the U.S. does and be lockstep with them. But I think because we don't have the same kind of military clout and the same kind of military culture in Canada, maybe it's just me, because I don't have that same feeling, that when, you know, Peter McKay or Stephen Harper or whoever says those same arguments, it doesn't ring as... I can see how it can resonate and ring with a vast majority of Americans.
Right.
Like, I just, when it... when those come out and I see those hear those sound bites on the news, I just kind of laugh. You know, I go, really, you're gonna try that? I mean, we're smarter than that. Not to say that we're smart. I mean, my words in my head is we're smarter than that, and it's not to say that, you know, people who believe that aren't smart. It's just,
yeah,
like but I don't know. Maybe it does resonate very well, and that's why they keep saying it. But I just keep thinking, is it really washing for a lot of Canadians? I don't know.
I can't help but think it does.
Yeah? Yeah?
I hate to say it, but I think outside of a lot of urban centers, I think it does.
Yeah.
I don't know. The different sides of the argument we hear about, we don't hear about what a lot of people think in the middle of nowhere in some of these areas of the country. Like, I think we hear from a lot of pundits, and we hear from a lot of army people, and we hear from a lot of parents of those who are serving, you know?
Right.
Who are worried about their son or daughter dying in vain, you know what I mean? And
right.
I just think, I don't know, I agree with what you're saying. I just think that there are a lot of Canadians who think that way.
Well, and I think the political system and the way representation works, there is, for a population that is 90% urban, 10% rural, politically speaking, it's more like 50-50.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they speak,
you know?
They don't win in the urban centers, right? Or they may have won a little more last time.
Right.
Last election. But they I think they speak to people, even if they're in urban areas, I think maybe in the more kind of least affected people,
yeah.
You know?
And I think by definition, although 90% are urban, I'm sure not 90% of the population would consider themselves living in urban areas.
I
you
fully
know?
Agree. Because you could say, I mean, Lower Mainland, right? But look what's in Lower Mainland.
Yeah. I mean, you could say Langley, you know, for Abbotsford,
yeah.
Chilliwack. I think by definition, they probably are considered urban by Statistics Canada.
Right.
But I would argue, and I'm sure you would agree, that I'm sure not everyone there would consider them to be urban.
Not in the way that we do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Let's face it, we're pretty urban here.
Yeah.
This is urban.
Commercial Drive's pretty urban.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. That's interesting, though. Shall we move on to Afghan detainees?
Yeah, I don't know if we need to...
And then we'll get into lighter stuff after, but it's a nice segue.
We don't need to, you know, spend a lot of time on this one because we kind of touched on it anyway, but I think, you know, this, you know... I just think this is pretty typical of... like the government that we have, they're just like pit bulls in their response, you know. And anyone who has a problem with what they're doing, they attack really hard. And Richard Colvin, the whistleblower, I think he's really brave to do what he did, to say that, you know, probably was most definitely some abuse going on.
Well, didn't like the head of the military say that? Say as much so? Like he
came back, right?
He went back on to the parliamentary committee and said, no, we didn't know. And then the next day he goes on to this press conference and say, oh, actually, well, yeah, in fact.
Well, that's an important point because a lot of people are like, well, wait a second. How come they're not coming out against that guy? Like they did Colvin.
Yeah.
Like,
it's easier to go after a middle ground civil servant than it is to go after the head of the military who's actively in that role.
See, I think that's so awful because he was over there. I mean,
yeah.
I think how bad does that look though? Like they should be on this guy just like they were on COVID, but they're not. So,
well, it's interesting. You raise the interesting story behind the story piece because, I mean, in a fundamental sense is, did they know, did the government and the political leaders know about it and they let it happen? And two, who cares? So, you know, I think there's some universal answers on human rights and about our role as a nation and how we conduct our business, our how we conduct ourselves in times of war in war circumstances. That's one thing. But the story about how the government decides to react to whistleblower situations is the more interesting story here.
Absolutely.
You know, and actually, that story came. That story came out shortly after the National, which is the news broadcast in the evening on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. They changed their format. Now they're all standing the whole time.
Everyone's like, "Sit down already! You're making me nervous."
I don't know why people need to stand, but anyways,
it's more on.
And they have a reporter, Wendy Mesley, whose job is to take a big story of the day and flip it a little bit. Like, what actually is this? Is the interesting piece of this story? And she flipped around this detainee story about the. Are whistleblowers effective, or is whistleblower legislation even worth the paper it's written on, kind of thing, because
right.
of the way the government is reacting. You know, I mean, so I thought that was a really fascinating point, and it was touched on much of what you just said, so. But yeah, so I didn't even think about that until that story came out. I'm like, you know, that's actually true. It's more about if things happen that are against the law, against the spirit of the law.
Right.
Oh, spirit of the law. We've got to talk about Lululemon.
Sorry. You saw my Facebook post.
Oh, I was so impressed.
So was I.
but anyway, so I thought that was an interesting piece of the story, so.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much more to say other than, you know, it's a sad situation. But I'll tell you this, I think they did know. I don't think they care. They're not the type to care. Our government is not the type to care if a few guys or more are getting abused when they're the guys that are, you know, throwing acid in little girls' faces. You know what I mean? What happens behind the Afghan curtains, fine by them. I'm sure that's their viewpoint, you know, if you deep down.
Okay. So, Lululemon.
Lululemon, I think VanOck need to just shut the hell up. And,
so the context of the story is, of course, the Olympic Games are coming, and then they have the old Olympic merchandise, and Lululemon, which is a yoga wear manufacturer,
yeah.
based out of, or started out of here in Vancouver, which should have won the rights to clothe the athletes, because it would have been the sexiest athletes ever, but you never
yes,
know, they might
I
get
know.
It for when it goes to Rio, right? You never know, that would be probably
yeah.
better for them. But anyway, so they came up with this cheer gear, like, just a couple of days ago, I think it was. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And to help people celebrate a very funky or whatever sporting event happening in Vancouver in between 2009 and 2011. Brilliant!
Yes.
So, and then, of course, VanOck says, or is completely disappointed.
No sportsmanship.
And that, you know, we would expect that people would not just live within the letter of the law, but within the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
Well, given that you're, like, the ones going after Olympia Pizza and whoever, you know,
they're
going
to talk.
Yeah, exactly. It's so weird. But, so that's the context for those of you who didn't know about it.
It's like, okay, so they're the only ones who are allowed to, them and their sponsors are the only ones allowed to profit off the Olympics and no one else. What about all the people, you know, whose tax dollars are?
Well, they,
I mean, come on, man. It's just too stupid.
And they said all the, if you buy clothing from the official clothiers, then that proceeds go to support athletes. Well, no. Proceeds go to support VanOck and the IOC, and maybe some tiny sliver goes to Canadian Olympic Committee.
Yeah.
Even the Canadian Olympic Committee, not all, that doesn't guarantee it goes to athletes, it goes to other things, right?
It's closed in Vancouver. Mittens made in China.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yes.
Elaine just whispered
yeah.
to us that the mitts, although I have a pair of mitts, actually.
Yeah! You do?
I was given the pair of mitts.
Well, as a gift.
As a gift.
That's one thing. At least you didn't buy them.
Yeah.
God.
but I want to, like, but you're right, or Elaine's right, the clothing is made in Vancouver from Lululemon, as opposed to a lot of the other stuff happening
elsewhere.
Well, when you think about those Cowichan sweater controversy, about when VanOck, one of part of the official clothier from the Bay, they put this knitted sweater that looks very much like those Cowichan sweaters, made in wherever they're made of, and they don't give any credit to the peoples in the Cowichan Valley who
oh, yeah.
make them.
day.
And, I mean, that's not, that's maybe the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law, you know?
I'm totally amazed that they're just so arrogant, it's not even funny. Like, I just can't believe they actually talk about spirit of the law and letter of the law. It's unbelievable. Because, you know, once they start talking about that, it just opens the floodgates for everyone to talk about all the bullshit that they've been putting up with Vanok for the last however many years, you know. But, you know, not to be super, depressing, but...
I just thought it was just brilliant. I thought, you can't
totally
say
brilliant.
2010, you can say 2009, 2011. Like, it was just... I would have loved to have been part of those meetings at the design, the design team for those clothing. Okay, let's look at this law really carefully and see what can we do, what
they,
we can't do. It's it would have been probably one of the most fun things to do.
They made triple sure that they couldn't be, you know, taken to task for this, like, in, you know, within the law. Like, they, obviously they double-checked and triple-checked.
It's too bad their clothes is kind of expensive.
Yeah, however, the outlet stores, though.
Oh, so I want to get something from Lululemon from that, because I just think I should reward just creative thinking. And,
yes.
And, you know, just, I think that's pretty. And when I end up going to the Olympics that I'm going to, I can wear that too.
It's okay. You're totally allowed to go to any event you want. Just because I'm completely boycotting it makes, you know, it makes for a good conversation.
Well, Vanessa has talked to me quite seriously. So, Justin, now that we have tickets, are you going to be a killjoy about it and blah, 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 you know, all these different things? And I said to Vanessa, I said, yes, I was totally not expecting to be going to these games. And now I am, to two events.
Yeah.
Because Jonathan was one of the lucky people who got in the last round of tickets, had 20 different windows open, and he finally got let in within 20 minutes of waiting. And so he got tickets.
Right.
And I said, it's like this.
Here it is.
I've got real moral objections of what's happened here. I do. But
you got tickets.
But I'm also not an idiot to know that this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and at some point I will die. And I will, and before the Olympics ever come back, I'm not going to travel to the Olympic Games. And my brother's like, well, maybe we'll travel to Rio, but it's going to be the sexiest games ever. So that's true.
That is for sure. There's no doubt about it.
So maybe that's true. But, you know, to pass up an experience now that's basically handed to me because we have tickets, you know, I'm not an idiot. I'm not crass, you know?
Yeah.
And...
well, it's not your nature.
And the other thing is, the objection... I don't have an objection to the Olympic spirit or the competitiveness
of
sport.
Not at all.
But I have an objection to the IOC and Vanok and those individuals and institutions that are in place to protect that spirit.
Yeah.
It's sort of like... I said to Vanessa, you know, the best, clearest thing is I don't dislike American people individually. I think they're probably all great people. I just didn't like the last 8 years of the federal government.
Absolutely.
You know? And the leadership and all that sort of stuff and what they tried to do in the name of the United States.
Right.
It's the same thing here.
Yeah.
I think, you know, an individual athlete working his or her butt off to get to be on the luge team or... short track speed skating or even the hockey teams or whatever, you know, they're living a dream and it's wonderful. But to have people at desks who are the ones responsible for making the venue in which that dream can be realized, they've lost sight.
Yeah,
they've lost really big sight, you know?
What do you think, though, about Olympic athlete funding? Should they be funded?
Well, one, they shouldn't be getting a headline in their H1N1 shots, that's for sure. Which they didn't, which is good.
Yeah.
Although the torch bearer did. I'm like, oh, God.
Well, they meet a lot of people. you're handing it off to a lot of people in 30 below degree weather.
I thought that's hilarious. I'm like,
you're in a lot of native communities. I mean, it just sounded really bad, like all the reasonings behind that. You know, just because they're more high risk. It's like, how offensive.
Maybe immunize those communities and then, you know. But, you know, I don't know.
Because my understanding is that we, as a federal, government, does fund.
Yes.
To some degree.
To some degree. Not to the degree that they probably could.
Right.
And not to the degree in which other countries do. I don't disagree with funding, you know, Olympic athletes in a certain way, because I think it sets goals for people. It does. I think there is something about if you see someone really excel and win a gold medal for your country in snowboarding or something, it encourages hundreds and thousands of young Canadians to be active and take up the sport and
right.
just, you know, like, I do
so there's
believe
good
that.
Positive
there's good positive
effects.
Things to that. I mean, I saw the Olympics, you know, I picked up snowboarding because I saw it in the Olympics. I thought, hey, that's kind of cool. I want to try it. And I did, right? So, I mean, there is this cause. Not that I snowboard anymore, but, but I did, you know, do it and try it, right? So I think there is, and some people, I mean, you know, you'll get an X number of people who try it and X minus whatever amount of people who will stick to it. And maybe X minus whatever who will actually maybe excel at it, right? So there is some of that effect. But I think for the sports where there is natural sponsors and other people can pick up the slack, you know, maybe it isn't as much needed, you know, so it should be targeted. Although not to say that government should abdicate responsibility just because the corporate sector can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
well, that would
I know
be a little too weird too.
So it's kind of hard to give a yes, no answer to that.
Well, I guess it seems that our, you know, what we spend on sports compared to what the state spends on sports, it's a little reasonable up here, a little more balanced perhaps. So I'm not against like a little funding, but you know, I'm not one of those people that say, you know, take the government out of our lives, you know, like I'm not like that at all, but I just think that, you know, it just seems a little off kilter with other things that they might or might not support. You know what's kind of funny is that, you know, when Harper did that Beatles song in that in Ottawa, he sung with a little help from my friends.
Yes.
And he, just a year earlier, he was making fun of people who go to galas and
yes.
events like that.
Yes.
I just wanted to point that out because I thought that was really funny. I actually did watch a few seconds of it.
Oh, I saw the whole thing.
Ugh. Come on, Yo-Yo. Yo-Yo.
I feel so bad. Like, Yo-Yo had no idea what he was being put into.
Not at all. He's a good guy, though.
Speaking of good guys, shall we end it with a topic of a really good guy, Tiger Woods?
I think we should talk about this. I want to say, first off, I'm shocked, but not shocked about how much press is on. Like, you open up every newspaper, they keep talking about it every day. McLean's has been talking about it, you know, for a couple weeks now.
I've been enjoying the coverage on TMZ.
Yeah. Well, TMZ, it's funny about TMZ, because they know. Now, even I, like, if there's one thing I'm curious about, I'm like, let's go to TMZ, see what they say, right? And sure enough, they know. They knew that Michael died before anyone else, and now they know this.
Well, TMZ, the TV show, is just entertaining. Like, it just is fun to watch.
Well, we grew up watching Entertainment Tonight. I mean, we watched that. And, you know,
but I think it's a much more, I wouldn't say balanced, but, you know, when you have Entertainment Tonight saying, you know, a news story or a story worth covering is going shopping with the Olsen twins.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to TMZ, although it's very paparazzi based.
Yeah.
It's definitely more, you know, like,
it's right in there.
You know, and I think, but they do, one thing I like about it, they don't trash everyone. Like, if they admire a celebrity, they'll actually give pretty good coverage, or they'll give person some props.
Oh,
if someone's
good.
A real jerk, like
they'll go to town.
Yeah, they'll go to town on you, right? Like, and I think that to me is the kind of balance that I don't mind watching in a entertainment, infotainment kind of, right. You know.
Because like, it's very important.
Yeah. Because it's not news. I mean, it's not like, you know, I'm not getting there. But I just, it's just so, like, I'm sitting on my couch 1 o'clock in the morning. It's like
what else?
Perfect time to watch TMZ. But anyways, Tiger Woods.
Well, I have to say that, you know, I've been talking a lot about this with a couple of ladies at work.
Okay.
Just because there's just a few of us upstairs and the rest are downstairs. But so ever since this came out, we've been shocked. Like every day we come into work and sure enough, another woman has come out and said, I'm another one, you know.
Isn't it like 15 or something at the moment? Or is it higher yet?
It's something like that.
It's quite huge.
So I'm thinking, you know, okay. He is in. And this none of this is an excuse by any means. Because there's children involved here.
Yes.
To me, which I think is the kind of the craziest part.
Yes.
He's got beautiful kids. One woman.
Would your mind change if he had ugly kids? Sorry, just keep going. I just had to say that.
See, this is who I have to talk to here.
So you were saying.
The guy who thinks that, no. He's if it was one woman he made a mistake with, like, you know, he thought he's having feelings for another woman and he was kind of wondering, he got all mixed up, whatever. That's one thing. That's maybe repairable.
Okay.
If he said, you know, he had transgressions, which is just a bullshit name for he fucked around, you know? So anyway, but once it got past one, and the number by the day was climbing, and all these women were coming out with text messages, and you gotta do this for me, you gotta take your name off your phone, like, things like that. It's amazing. I think, I immediately thought, okay, what's in Tiger's head? Let's picture ourselves being Tiger for a second. He's got money coming out of, I mean, everywhere. He's got millions, $1 billion. He's probably the best golfer ever. And he's now married to this, you know, beautiful wife from Sweden. He's got kids. He can do whatever he wants ever. He's got this huge mansion in Florida. He's got no rules. Like, he doesn't, like, who is he going to answer to, right? So he's got this psychological problem where he's like, hey, I gotta wind down after winning this tournament. I'm in Las Vegas. My wife's on the East Coast, or she doesn't happen to be here. Or I'm gonna see who's around, and the woman throwing themselves at me anyway, why not, right? So he gets into this pattern that he doesn't even probably realize what he's doing, like, and who he's hurting and all this kind of stuff. But then I think, well, that's just that perception. And now he's gotten himself so deep with all this that I've never seen someone held in such esteem go so far down so quickly. Like, I think that's the amazing thing. Like, I don't know why we thought Tiger was squeaky clean.
Like, yeah, then he like never why, once said he was.
Exactly.
And, yeah, it's funny.
Why? Exactly. Like, if, you know, like, why did we put... he's an amazing golfer, and he's, you know, he has probably a lot of charitable things he's doing, and he brings a lot of...
Jerks are charitable, though.
True, but he obviously, when he plays, it brings a lot of money into the industry and all that side of it. But, you know, here he is, just, like, fucking anything that walks. And I'm just like... It is pretty shocking when you think about it. Because, you know, he's not... Like, he's, like, our age. He's only a year older than us. And here he's got... He's doing all this stuff that you never would have thought he would do.
Right.
So I was really just shocked. Like, of how many women. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, there's probably a lot of single guys who do this all the time. Who just think it's a big deal. But it's because he's married that it's a problem. And he's got kids, that's a problem. It's a huge problem. I don't know how... Where do you go from here? you know what I mean?
I don't know where you go from here personally, but professionally, he'll come back at a certain
point, and he'll
be fine.
I think professionally, yeah, but I think it will be a cloud for the rest of his life, I think.
You know, I... Personally, yes. But professionally, no. Like, if you think about Magic Johnson, he's still regarded as a elite, legendary NBA player. Kobe Bryant, same thing. And you forget, I guess you forget because they're all wearing fancy pants and nice shirts or whatever, that golf is still a professional sport. And, you know, and so it's very interesting. So, like, yeah, I mean, his money has not been based, and his and his success has not been based on him being a nice guy. It's been based on his talent. So, for professionally, I think it's all gonna, you know,
professionally, I think he'll bounce back. Yeah,
but I just find it really, I read a really interesting article. There was sort of, and I forget where it was. I don't even know. I can find the link. I have no idea where I read it. I think I read it physically in a newspaper.
Yeah,
and it was about talking to Jack Nicklaus, who.
Talked
for the first time about it, and he said, you know, and I forget, the comments are actually irrelevant in terms of what Jack Nicklaus said, except that he figures he'll bounce back, like he's got to work out his issues. But they compared him, Tiger Woods coming into the PGA, and Jack Nicklaus. When Jack Nicklaus came into the PGA, he was already married, and within 9 months of being in the PGA, his first child was born.
Sure.
So he was established as a family man, had a son before, as success started to roll into his life, sporting wise. While Tiger came in single,
And a hound dog,
and he had people. I mean, people were saying now that it was a common knowledge on the tour that Tiger Woods was a dog.
Yeah,
and so he came in and got all of this success while he was single. Right, and people were saying that Tiger was surprised that he would get such accolades as any other professional sports athlete would, because you know it's golf, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, he brought a whole lot of elite attention to the sport that wasn't there before, and
that's right.
You know, I mean, people weren't clamoring over Greg Norman the way, or Arnold Palmer the way they're going after Tiger Woods, right? So it was fascinating, just sort of do the juxtaposition of the two. And. And, I mean, again, not that I'm, you know, explaining away why, you know, it's okay to do what he did. Like, it's pretty awful. Just very, very awful. But when people started to have stories about, you know, oh, will the PGA survive? Or will this, you know, oh, that's all rubbish. You know, it's going to be fine, right? But
yeah,
you worry about the family, the broken family, the wife, the kids. And, yeah. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, but a lot of people are debating, like, so many things that don't need to be debated. I mean, it's very simple. Like, he obviously is going to get divorced now, apparently, they say. So he's got to work through that, and he's got to work on making sure his relationship with his kids is good.
The kids.
And then he's got to get back to golf eventually. And what else is there to say, really? You know, like, I think people are just amazed by how many women have come out, and how many of them could probably prove it. You know, I think
there'll have to be this tally between Tiger Woods on one side and Wilt Chamberlain on the other.
Yes. But, yeah, well, Christmas is coming.
Yes, yeah.
And,
any thoughts on the year, since I'm sure this is the last one, and, you know, we're getting close to an hour?
Yeah.
But as we wrap it up, any thoughts on the year?
You know, it was the year of the so-called recession, and I think, but as we were talking about before our podcast, I think they're, you know, our country anyway, these seem to have kind of bounced back in some ways, in real estate and other things. But I think, I don't know, it's just kind of interesting. I think more now than ever before, it's kind of hard to disseminate what's really happening. Like, with our politics, with our society, with... You know, there's so many different viewpoints now. Everyone's got a blog, and, you know, I've got one of my own. You know, it's just like... But I think...
I'm on Twitter.
Going... Yes. You're all wondering about that on Facebook. But anyway, I think going forward, like, in the next year, it's just kind of really kind of understanding how we can kind of figure out how we want things to change for the better. Like, whether it's climate... whether it's, you know, just things like gay marriage, like down in the States, and when it comes to wars, you know, there's still a lot of war going on and things like that. And I think it's just kind of really trying to weed through all the bullshit and kind of figure out what really is right. Mm. That's kind of my take.
So if, and Venice and I were talking about this today, if you, on a personal level, could put, sum up your year, 2009, in one word, what would it be? So, forget about the whole world around us, but you, like, how was your year, in one word?
You know what? In one word, I think it was fantastic.
Nice. And in one why? Word? No, okay. you can say why. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, I don't know. Every year has been good with Elaine and our dog Dexter, and, you know, we're in our...
Oh!
Well, it's true. We're in our place, and we've done different things this year. We went to Paris this year, and that was huge for us. That was a big moment, and, you know, we look back on it fondly, and you know, we got our car this year, we did a lot of fun things with friends. Musically, we've done different things. Elaine kind of bowed out from music, and, you know, I've joined a couple of bands, which we'll post links with those. Sorry, I'm losing my voice again here. And so it was kind of a year of different things, and I like that. It wasn't like 2008. I think in 2008 we were still doing some of the same things. We had a lot of good times and stuff, but for us, I mean, when I say me, I mean us anyway.
Yeah.
I don't really think singularly, but... I think, yeah, we were doing new things and new experiences. So any year that goes by with that and we're still healthy is good.
Nice. And if you have a word, just thinking ahead for the year, and you have a word for the year ahead, something that encapsulates your hopes, your dreams, your thoughts, your visions for next year?
I think just musicaler.
Nice.
It has to be one word.
Musicaler. Nice.
What about you?
My year, I think in one word it would be turbulent. I said it to my sister this afternoon, and there's a lot of turbulence in my year this year. From relationship turbulence to turbulence with the changes, turbulence in a changing kind of way, an up and down kind of thing with my father.
Right.
And, but, you know, with downs, there's a whole bunch of ups. Like, I also have a new car, which is part of my up this year. And, but yeah, so, yeah, my year was kind of like that.
So for next year then? Renewal?
Yes. How many times have I used renewal for the year ahead, huh?
Okay, but you can't... Don't think that isn't still a possibility, if that's still the word you want to use.
You know, I think change. I think what you were saying about what made your year fantastic, I think I'm up for some of that. Like,
yeah.
Change. I mean, not necessarily... I'm not envisioning going to Paris with Elaine or anything, or having Dexter around. You know, not exactly the same change as you did for 09. That joke just died. Anyways, but yeah, no, some change. You know, like there's, and with a lot of turbulence comes a moment of calm, and I think calm in 2010. I want some of that, but not calm in that it starts that complacency when you talked about your 08. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the same.
Yeah.
So
that's
I don't want a lot of change, but a few things changing would be nice. You know,
so
I don't
know. Happy changes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And of course, happy changes. I don't know what they are.
Well, I think you just
yeah.
want every year to be, even if you had a, like I said, the word fantastic, I want next year to be even better. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we all want every time. I think, you know, you know, there's always stuff we can improve. Like another thing I did this year was join a new gym. And late this year. And once I get a little bit better...
Where are you going?
Fit Express. You know that one behind the Super Value there?
Giselle wants me to go with her, but she goes to that gym, and she's gonna take me, I guess, as a guest or something
to try it out.
You know, I might right here after work or something, right?
I like it because they've got a lot of stuff you can use, but it's pretty mellow. Like, it's not like a big Fitness World.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Not a lot of steroid monkeys and stuff. It's good.
Okay, well maybe I'll be there too.
Awesome. So I want to be even more fit next year too.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to get better. But sounds good. That seems we have got some goals for 2010, and we're at 1 hour and 5 minutes. I think we've talked each other's ear off, and all of our 4 listeners off too.
Yes, well, that's another thing next year. Get more listeners.
More listeners.
More feedback.
So this has been The Dot Matrix. You can find us at thedotmatrix.com or search for us on iTunes, I think. The store, we're there as well. And you can email us through our website or through our Facebook page or everything that we've got going. So
you can listen to us, and you can listen to Bill Moyers.
Yeah.
And you can listen to Oscar Peterson.
Sounds good.
All right.
Take care.